Maine Attorney General Aaron Frey on issues facing his office. Since 1990, the Maine Attorney General has been charged with investigating police officer-involved shootings in the state. This year, so far, there have been 11, including 8 fatal shootings. Only one other year, 2017, has seen so many. Attorney General Aaron Frey has been working to improve the process for reviewing these cases, and now a new law establishes a time frame for them. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss how officer-involved shootings are investigated in Maine. We'll also discuss civil rights, consumer protection, environmental threats, and other legal concerns the Attorney General's office has been involved with, including joining with other states to fight the Texas abortion law. What are your questions for Maine Attorney General Aaron Frey? That's next on Maine Calling. But first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. As Attorney General for Maine, Aaron Frey is responsible for overseeing a broad range of issues from criminal justice to civil rights to consumer protection. Well, today we're going to learn about what his office is currently dealing with. We welcome your comments and questions for Maine's Attorney General Aaron Frey. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can post a comment on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Attorney General Aaron Frey, welcome back to Maine Calling.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Aaron Frey, I'm sure this is not a statistic you want to be talking about in late October on Maine Calling, but unfortunately it's the case. Maine has now had 11 police-involved shootings, the highest ever, tying 2017 so far. I know that your office investigates these shootings, and I'm wondering what you make of this number, per capita, the highest in New England. What's going on? Why are there so many police-involved shootings in Maine this year?
Well, I don't know that I'm in the best position to talk about the, you know, what's happening on the ground today in terms of how force is being deployed. What I can say and what I'm going to ask listeners to be thinking about as we do process the information that we're getting in about this use of deadly force in law enforcement, there are multiple points at which these cases are going to be reviewed. As you mentioned, Jennifer, my office investigates the use of deadly force by an officer. When I'm done with my review, it gets passed on to the Deadly Force Review Panel, which is recently established back in 2019. And that panel looks at what happened, whether or not best practices were complied with, and whether or not there's any recommendations as to, you know, what was found and what's going to happen. By the way, that panel has an annual report due to the legislature this January, which will provide a look at the cases that it's reviewed over the past year. That might be helpful to that question about, you know, what's been going on that has generated these numbers. There's also an instant review team that each, whenever an agency, a law enforcement agency, has an officer involved in the use of deadly force, there's a team at the agency level. They write a report, and that's available to the public as to whether or not there were any issues. There's also civil actions that are filed and press reporting. So I mentioned those different points at which these different cases, these use of deadly force incidents, are reviewed, because it's going to be important to follow, you know, how that develops, take a look at what all these different points are finding. You know, for my part, every investigation that we close, my office writes a letter. I post it online so that the public has access to it at the Attorney General for the State of Maine website. Those are the different places at which folks will be able to, you know, get an understanding, a full perspective as to what's happening.
I'm guessing part of the reason you're telling me about all these different layers and including the new review panel is that since 1990, since the Attorney General's office has been reviewing these cases, there has never been a case in which an officer has been found to unlawfully use force in Maine. And someone might be skeptical and someone might say, wait a minute, especially in light of what's going on around the country, is that really right? And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're saying, look, that's only one lens to say whether or not it was lawful. We need to be looking at whether or not best practices led up to that incident.
Right. In part, I mean, so for me, when I approach the job that I'm entrusted with in determining whether or not there's a justified use of deadly force, I don't approach my investigation with the idea that I need to find this justified, that I need to find this unjustified, right? I don't approach it with that lens. What I do is I take the law as it's been provided to me by the Maine State Legislature. I take a look at all of the facts that are presented to me, and I make a determination based on that evidence for that specific case about whether or not the law compels a certain finding. I don't consider, you know, we have five cases over here that this was decided, so I'm going to use those cases to decide this one. That's just not how it works. It's each individual case has its own individual analysis, applying the law that the legislature has provided. And to the extent that the public has the ability to look in on this through what it is that the AG's office provides for, you know, its written summation of how it arrived at this individualized decision, to the extent that there are those collateral resources like the Deadly Force Review Panel reports, like the Incident Review Team reports, this is all information that's available to the public that can help understand how it is that these conclusions are arrived at. And so, you know, I do encourage folks, yes, there is that number looking at the aggregate of different justification findings. There's a lot behind that. And, you know, what isn't as robust is the conversation about those specific incidents and how they played out and whether or not the law that the legislature has provided, you know, how that applies.
There's a new law about how you will do these investigations. It gives you a timeline. It says these reviews, tell me if I'm correct about this, must be complete within 180 days. Attorney General, is that right?
That's correct. So there for a number of years, the time it took for the AG's office to investigate and report out has been gradually increasing. And there was a conversation that started at the end of 2020 with some members of the legislature, some members of the public, and we all worked together to establish a timeline that says when an incident occurs, the AG's office has 180 days to completely investigate and report out on that use of deadly force. There is the ability to ask for more time. If for example, there's some testing that hasn't come through yet, or there was some difficulty in getting certain evidence squared away. But at the max, 270 days is the longest it can take. So between 180 and 270, and that should not only, you know, ensure that the length of time it takes for a thorough investigation is more reasonable, but it also ensures that these reports are put out for public inspection, are delivered to the Deadly Force Review Panel, are provided to the families and the law enforcement who are involved, to the communities who are involved. You know, it's important to have that timely information, which I think is what this law recognizes, and make sure we're back on track with a timely report out.
All right. So this law just went into effect, correct?
That's right. On October 18th, which was last Monday.
Okay. So it's into effect. I understand there you have inherited, and because of the recent police shootings, have added to a backlog of these investigations in your case. Where does that in your office? Where does that stand today?
As some listeners may know, as you may know, Jennifer, again, back in 2020, we were looking at where we were at and how we could get ourselves, how we could get reasonably caught up. I had set forward a plan to get caught up. As an example, over just the last several weeks, my office has been able to turn out, I think we're releasing one today. So that I believe is the fourth or fifth one that we've put out in a short amount of time. We put a number out back in April. We are getting caught up. You know, I've dedicated additional homicide prosecutors to look at the evidence to make the legal assessment that's required. We have investigators working hard. And that, by the way, is at the same time that investigators are investigating the recent use of deadly force incidents. So I think we have a good plan. I think it's beginning to bear the fruit that one would expect. And I have a high level of confidence that it's you know, with a little bit more patience, we're going to be able to get reasonably caught up, you know, early into 2022.
Early into 2022. So I was going to ask, I mean, do you have the manpower? Do you have the staff to be able to? I saw reporting from late September that said 18, a backlog of 18. Is that accurate? And where are you today?
Sure, that was. I believe the number might be 19. I would point out that in the same time period that we put out 4 to 5 reports, we got in 4 new investigations. So the, you know, when looking at that backlog number, it is important to remember that particularly for the instance that occurred in 2021, the law, the public, me, expect that there be a thorough investigation. So it's going to take time to make sure that all the I's are dotted, all the T's are crossed, so that when it comes time to make that decision about whether or not the officer was justified in deploying deadly force, that all of the information is available. So yes, that number, that 19 number is still the backlog number, is still the outstanding investigation number. But please remember that, you know, a good chunk of those cases involve incidents that occurred in 2021 and are actively being investigated.
Sure, sure. No, I completely understand. And I do want to move on to some other topics, but I just want to ask, you did mention that one is going to be released today. Which case is that and what did you find?
This was a case involving an individual who was, I found justified, right? And it involved an individual who had used his vehicle surrounded by law enforcement to try to push law enforcement vehicles out of the way, in that process coming very close to going over an officer that had been knocked over because of the vehicle. And so that use of the vehicle in such a dangerous way with disregard for the law enforcement officers who were clearly yelling for this individual to stop the vehicle, to get out. An officer fired upon that individual to prevent the vehicle from going and running over one of his law enforcement coworkers. So that's the, I regret that the name is not immediately coming to mind, a bad time for the name not to come to mind. But that's going to be released today. And that occurred in down in southern Maine. I believe it was Gorham.
Attorney General Fry, one of the other very important issues that your office has been dealing with for a decade now is the opioid epidemic. And I know that during this pandemic, one of the things that really has been maybe even overshadowed by the COVID-19 pandemic is the fact that drug deaths continue to rise in Maine. Your office helps to monitor and report the data on drug use. Talk about the pandemic's effects on drug use and on overdoses and what you've been tracking.
Yeah, you know, and it is so important that we continue to think about the impact, not only of the opioid crisis that we're experiencing, but the impact, the overlay of the pandemic and the isolation and the challenge in accessing services, particularly earlier on in the pandemic when, you know, you didn't have medical facilities or doctor's offices opened up for the public to come in and seek help unless there was an emergency, right? And so that isolation, that that lack of access to some treatment, you know, that did lead to a notable spike, not just in the state of Maine, but this was seen across the nation. So, Jennifer, you probably remember, and listeners remember, that you know, the federal government had put out its own information about how there was a 30% increase over the course of the last year in overdose deaths, in part because of the impact of the pandemic. You know, what we've been doing this year, you know, the Mills administration and the director of opioid response, Gordon Smith, working very hard to ensure that there are interventions available for individuals who are suffering from a drug addiction, or family members or community members who are working to get their loved one or friend or colleague into the directed in the appropriate direction. We've been working with the Office of Behavioral Health to provide information on a monthly basis. So that started at the beginning of this year. It's continued every single month. We post information on MaineDrugData.org, or there's a report, I should say, that goes up on MaineDrugData.org that highlights the, you know, look, folks continue to succumb to overdose deaths because of drugs. There's also the number of non-fatal overdoses. So folks who, you know, but for the intervention of naloxone, but for the intervention of somebody who can get them the appropriate, you know, medical attention, you know, we're putting that information up along with information about what interventions are available for individuals. So the hope is this monthly reporting, it will continue to highlight this issue at a very important time where we're struggling with the opioid crisis, where it meets the pandemic, right? But also reminding people that they just take some time to think about, you know, how is your family doing? How are your neighbors doing? If you know that they are struggling with an addiction to a substance, it's just so important to be there for them at this time. So that's my hope, that folks will look at that. Let me add one more thing. A recent law that passed established the Accidental Drug Overdose Death Review Panel. This is a panel that's set up with a number of different folks from across the spectrum, from government to provider to citizen, to take a look at, you know, what is going on with these overdose deaths. Are there commonalities? Where is it that maybe interventions are lacking, or where are interventions working to prevent these overdoses? That panel just came online. Its first meeting was actually this month, October, and that should be meeting regularly. Again, all at trying to get at how we can, you know, be there, be present, be supportive for those who are struggling with an opioid addiction.
Well, we do have to take a quick break. We are speaking with Maine Attorney General Aaron Fry. We have so much more to ask him, including Maine joining by signing a letter against the Texas abortion law. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from the UMaine Alumni Association, presenting Black Bear Alumni, their economic and community impact, available at umainealumni.com, and the Maine law firm of Eaton Peabody, serving generations of Maine families and businesses from offices in Augusta, Bangor, Brunswick, Ellsworth, and Portland.
COVID-19 has launched all of us into the unknown, with health in the background of everything we do. So in this new era, what does it mean to live in a healthy community with clean air, safe streets, and access to education? Hello, I'm Philip Young. This week on World Affairs, reimagining a post-COVID world where we define health more broadly.
World Affairs this afternoon at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
For business owners across Maine, Maine Public's audience is your audience.
I'm Ellen Tracy. We're here at Eastern Mold Remediation in Eastern Basements. We're a family-owned and operated business. We started with Maine Public 5 years ago. Maine Public has been the most successful aspect of our marketing efforts. I just can't say enough good things about our experience.
Visit us at mainepublic.org to get started.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. With me today, Aaron Fry, Attorney General for the State of Maine. Share your comments or questions via email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can post a comment to Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now, Jessica Fay. She is in her third term in the Maine House of Representatives and represents parts of Casco, Poland, and Raymond. Representative Fay, thanks for giving us a call.
Oh, thank you, Jennifer. And because October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, it's nice to be here with the Attorney General.
Well, tell us about legislation you introduced that would protect people from economic abuse. What does that mean?
So economic abuse and the bill that I worked on with my constituent is defined now in the Protection from Abuse statute as causing a person to be financially dependent by maintaining control over their finances. So economic abuse is part of the power and control wheel in domestic abuse. And someone who is committing economic abuse could be preventing their partner from accessing education, their bank account, preventing them from working, or ruining their credit, among other things.
Aha. Uh-huh. So this is a law now.
This is a law now, yeah. It took a while, as good legislation does, to marinate a bit, but the Governor Mills signed it in June of 2019, and the law does three things. One, it defines economic abuse, which is a big deal. Not too many states have this definition. And then it adds economic abuse to the Protection from Abuse statute. And then the piece that the Attorney General is helping out with right now is that the law basically says that if your credit is affected by an abusive partner in a negative way, that the credit data reporting agencies need to put a hold on that after investigating it so that that it can't impact your ability to get a job or rent an apartment, those things that we need good credit for.
Attorney General Fry, I'll turn to you. Since the law was passed, have you actually been able to put this law into action? Have you had cases where you've had to go to the credit agencies and help people fix their credit?
Well, not yet. And as Representative Fay pointed out, the challenge is that as soon as this law it took effect, it was challenged by entities, by credit reporting agencies that do not believe that this is lawful for what Maine did. So my office, working with Representative Fay, working with advocates and advocacy organizations, have been working to protect this law, keep it in effect. But until we have that meted out, until the litigation is complete, we're not going to see the enforcement until the court signs off. Right now, it's actually at the First Circuit. So we've argued it all the way through to the First Circuit. We're waiting on the First Circuit Court of Appeals to provide an opinion on whether or not Maine is allowed to do this. I will say, and I've talked with Representative Fay about this, it's what's challenging about this is that it seems like this is a no-brainer, right? I mean, to the extent that somebody is experiencing financial crisis because of economic abuse, it really just isn't fair that that be held against them by a credit reporting agency. It doesn't tell the whole story. So why in the world the credit reporting communities don't do this on their own? It's beyond me, but we're going to keep fighting to defend this law. We're hoping for a positive outcome at the First Circuit.
And Attorney General Fry, when do you expect that decision to be handed down? Do you have a sense?
Well, I regularly ask attorney in the office who handles this, we have gone weeks thinking this will be the week, this will be the week, this will be the week. There's no deadline, though, for when a decision has to be issued. And so it could be today, it could be months from now. I'm hoping soon, though, because we you know, as Representative Fay pointed out, this is important. It does important things, and it was passed by the legislature, signed by the governor. So we'd like to put it in full effect.
Interesting. And Representative Fay, this would be a first of its kind law, correct? That Maine would be a leader on this.
Maine is a leader on this, absolutely. It's important. It's an issue that we haven't really heard a lot about, although there is a new show on Netflix called Made that really, I think, raises the issue in a compelling way. It's a piece, you know, we can see sometimes physical abuse, but this is a type of abuse that doesn't show up in physical ways and can have long-term impacts on survivors and their families. So I'm grateful to Attorney General Fry and his office for defending it.
Well, Representative Jess Fay, thanks so much for calling in. State Representative representing parts of Poland and Casco, I appreciate you calling into Maine Calling today. Representative Fry, I want to talk a little bit about hate crimes. We've done a couple programs on Maine Calling looking at what's been happening during the pandemic. And I'm wondering what your office is seeing. Are you seeing more hate crimes tied to the pandemic and to the racial tensions that have increased in the past year or two?
Well, we have been involved in bringing, so my office is able to bring a civil case against an individual who violates another individual's constitutional rights, right? If it's based on, you know, gender, ethnicity, you know, disability, you know, the legislature has put forward these classifications of, you know, saying, look, folks, you know, you can't be targeted because of who it is that you are, right? And so we have brought more civil cases this year to stop that activity from happening. The challenge is that in order for, you know, the way the law works, in order for us to be able to bring such a case, you know, not only does there have to be that conduct, right? That discriminatory conduct, that violation, but it has to threaten or actually cause some type of physical harm or property damage. And so we are mindful, you know, we do get reports of activity where people are saying things that are discriminatory or disrespectful. But if it doesn't reach the level of actually, you know, creating a threat or posing a threat or actual physical or property crime, we can't do anything with that, right? I mean, to the extent that the First Amendment plays in with sort of, you know, people are able to think what they're able to think, say what they're able to say up to a point. You know, I am familiar with the FBI reporting that was made back late summer that talked about the number of reports that came in. We get some of those same reports and we act on every single one that we're able to act upon. And we work really hard to find ways to be able to act because it's so important that folks not be targeted because of who they are.
I'm going to go to some audience questions here. This one is a tweet. What can the Attorney General's office do to help Maine mitigate and otherwise respond to climate change?
Suppose a couple of things. You know, one, my office is very active in working with other attorneys general's offices across the nation in order to support and promote, you know, when it comes to efficiency standards, you know, so for example, when it comes to emissions, vehicle emissions, Maine is one of a handful of states that along with California has a higher threshold for emissions, vehicle emission standards. we work with these handful of other states to protect our ability to have those high standards, which would yield benefits to not to the environment, but also, you know, a small part in addressing climate change. Regularly work with these offices across the nation in order to help make sure that Maine continues to have the ability to, you know, pass rules, pass laws, benefit from activities that the federal government puts into effect to ensure that our climate is protected and that we're moving in the right direction. The other thing is, this office recently was provided the authority by the legislature to enter into contingency fee agreements with outside counsel in order to bring prospective litigation. And what primarily drove that is, the ability for my office to bring litigation against those who are contaminating, who are creating chemicals that cause environmental damage. Right now my office has requests for proposals out, asking for proposals on how we can bring litigation, legal claims against those individuals who have created PFAS chemicals, PCB chemicals. These are two different ways in which we can address not only the climate crisis in terms of how my office can engage in promoting positive rules, laws, action with respect to climate, but also how we can help remedy some of the contamination that's already been done.
An email here from Marie in Augusta. It's a consumer email. I have filed complaints with three relevant resources about my Toyota Yaris 2019. The vehicle has less than 18,000 miles and recently required new brakes and rotors in the front. I was told the reason I didn't drive the car enough during 2020. This vehicle also has a recall on it for a faulty fuel pump. The cost of the new front brakes and rotors was over $500, as my warranty does not cover wear and tear. I've asked Toyota for an explanation and have received nothing. I've phoned, emailed, and also contacted the dealership where I bought the car. No response has been what I have gotten. So what can your office do for people like Marie who are dealing with problems with their car and what they believe that their dealership should be doing for them?
Well, I'm very sorry to hear about that, Marie. Let me give you two numbers that you and listeners should think to call when you're experiencing something like this. There's the regular line for my consumer division here at the office, 626-8849. If you're toll free here in Maine, you can call 800-436-2131. This will get you into the consumer division in my office, or if you just call the regular line, just ask for the consumer protection division. You know, we can help you navigate that challenge. Maine does have laws that protect consumers. We do have a lemon law here in Maine when it comes to, comes to automobiles. And we do have volunteer mediators who can help facilitate that conversation between you and the dealership. You know, it's a little bit busy right now. As you might guess, the pandemic created a lot of need for a lot of these conversations. But please call my office, get connected with the Consumer Protection Division. We can help you have that conversation with your dealership.
All right, we'll go to Sue, who's calling from South Portland. Hi, Sue. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I was just wondering, considering the opioid crisis in Maine, if Maine was considering filing a lawsuit against the bankruptcy with the Sackler family. I believe they got immunity from bankruptcy, and some other states have filed lawsuits to prevent them from getting that.
Yep. Sue, that's a really important question, and I'm glad that I have an answer that probably is consistent with what you were hoping to hear. So I have brought suit against Purdue Pharmaceutical, and against the Sackler members of the Sackler family for their role. So we my office has been at the table when it comes to the litigation that's going on with Purdue and the Sackler family, has been at the table with other attorneys general in the bankruptcy proceedings. In addition, my office is also very engaged in litigation against Johnson & Johnson as a manufacturer of opioids, as well as three different distributors of opioids for the role that they played in perpetuating the opioid crisis. And we are at the point where in the not terribly distant future, we may see some significant resources coming into Maine from the Purdue litigation, Sackler litigation, from Johnson & Johnson, from the other three distributors that Maine can use. And there's also cities and counties that are involved in this litigation can use to abate the opioid crisis. So we are involved, Sue, in that litigation. We are looking to hold at least financially accountable. I recognize that that doesn't go as far as is probably appropriate or is appropriate with respect to what might be criminal conduct that was engaged in by folks like the Sacklers. But certainly on the economic front, we are looking at seeing some significant resources from that Purdue litigation in the state of Maine.
Sue, thanks very much for calling in and for your question. We are speaking with Maine's Attorney General, Aaron Frey. If you have a question for him, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, or you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Wayne Fleet. Learn more about their November 3rd middle school academic adventure at waynefleet.org/events by the Maine Jewish Film Festival, an organization that believes great movies unite us, online November 6th through 14th, mjff.org, and Evergreen Home Performance with careers in home energy efficiency renovation. Learn more at evergreenyourhome.com/careers.
I'm Tanya Mosley. China is exploiting how online search engines work and spreading rumors that COVID-19 came from a U.S. Army lab.
Essentially carpet bombing certain keywords with just any pieces of content. When people search for that keyword, they are more likely to get the conspiracy theorist point of view.
Next time on Here and Now.
That's coming up shortly after Maine Calling. From 12 noon until 2 here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public's Dash of Maine Cooking Challenge is back, this time with a masterpiece twist. Now through November 5th, we invite you to send us your favorite original recipe that uses as many Maine-grown ingredients as possible, along with a picture of the completed dish and a note about which masterpiece character you've made the dish for and why. We'll pick two winners each week. Visit mainepublic.org for all the details.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Joining me, Maine Attorney General Aaron Frey. You can call 1-800-399-3566 if you have a question for him. You can also send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Again, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. So speaking of joining lawsuits, Attorney General Frey, Maine has recently joined the lawsuit against Texas. Tell us about that.
Yes, that's right. As I'm sure your listeners are aware, the state of Texas has a unique and, in my view, disturbing law in effect that creates a vigilante system of trying to keep women from being able to engage in their own reproductive choices, preventing access to abortion services. And so there's been some litigation ongoing with that. The United States has filed suit against the state of Texas, claiming that this law is unconstitutional. I joined with a number of other states' attorneys general to support the United States in this effort, joining Maine to this legal effort to prevent the Texas law from taking effect. And that's only one of the cases. I mean, you know, what in some ways, you know, Texas is the example of the most egregious form of a state working to interfere with an individual's ability to make decisions about their own reproductive care. But I've also joined with attorneys general to support efforts opposing equally concerning restrictions in the state of Mississippi, in the state of South Carolina, You know, all of these cases are working their way up to the Supreme Court. You know, we have a court that has sent signals that it may be willing to overturn half a century of legal precedent when it comes to an individual being able to make their own reproductive choices. And so as far as I'm concerned, it is important that when the opportunities present themselves, like the United States suing Texas to prevent the this law taking effect, I'm going to join those to make sure that you know, the law is upheld, that the half a century of precedent is continues to be in effect, and you know, candidly, that women have the ability to access services that are appropriate for their reproductive decisions, up to and including an abortion.
All right. And Attorney General Fry, I know a big part of something that's very important to you is the Civil Rights Team Project. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's very exciting. So this is the 25th year that the Office of the Attorney General has had its Civil Rights Team Project. The goal of this project is to provide, to be a resource to schools across our state, to elementary, middle level, and high schools, helping them set up civil rights teams that are focused on, you know, earlier I mentioned that the state of Maine is only able to bring actions up to a point, and that there's this conduct that Maine can't cover. Wouldn't it be great if we helped, you know, teach people about how important it is to recognize folks, respect their race, respect their national origin, respect their religion, respect their disabilities? So the Civil Rights Team Projects provide support for schools across our state, up to approximately 180 teams right now that work with these students and help them form their own teams on how to be welcoming, how to recognize the important individual characteristics of individuals, provide that supportive fostering communication. And I mentioned it's the 25th year that my office has done this. Let me also add that November 5th is a day of welcome. And what that means is you'll see, you know, I mentioned there's 180 different civil rights teams across our state. Some number of those teams are going to be, you know, working to highlight that it's important to be welcoming to individuals regardless of their backgrounds, celebrate that diversity. And so, you know, you should look to see what your high school, your elementary school, your middle school, look to see if they have a civil rights team, look to see if they're going to be, you know, having activities on this day of welcome on November 5th. I encourage folks to pay attention to what they're doing, support what they're doing. And frankly, this is just a really important part of ensuring that there's a constructive, encouraging conversation about how to respect people where they're at.
All right, we're going to go to Rosemary, calling from York. Hi, Rosemary, go ahead.
Hi there. Attorney General, I just wanted to ask you, I sold my house a couple of years ago. My husband passed away, and I don't know how it happened, but I got scammed out of all the money of my house. So I have nothing now. I'm a nurse, and I am working. I'm 84, so it's not easy to work. But my son contacted your office when it all happened, and I actually made out an application online to the FBI, writing down all the various names and the bank, but I never heard anything from anyone. So I've never recovered anything. And I just wondered, is there anything I can do? Are you aware that this is happening to so many women who lose their husbands? I guess, I don't know exactly why, but we're targeted, I guess.
Well, Rosemary, first of all, I am very sorry to hear about all that had transpired, what you're going through. And even more concerning is that that you may have put in something to my office and didn't receive any sort of closure on that. I have asked offline, of course, that your information be provided to me so I can follow up with you separately. You know, in terms of scams, it is not uncommon that individuals regardless of age, regardless of profession and education level, regardless of status in life, that you know, there are some very savvy con artists out there who are able to talk people, you know, present situations that sound real, but are not, and lead to what you just described you experienced. We are available. Certainly, the DA's office, the district attorney's offices, who prosecute crimes like this, are available. You know, we do work with state and federal partners in trying to investigate this and keep aware of what's going on. What I can tell you, though, Rosemarie, is that I'm going to take the information from Maine Public and follow up with you separately to see if maybe we can look more into your specific situation.
Thank Rosemarie, so we've taken down your phone number, and we're going to give that to the Attorney General's office. And we really hope that we're able to do something for he is able to do something for you. Thank you so much for calling, and good luck to you. We're going to move on to Paul, who's calling from Belfast. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Good morning, Attorney General Fry. I am a intertidal consultant for the Harriet L. Hartley Conservation Area, and I'd like to thank you personally for all the effort that you put into upholding the laws of the state of Maine, including the conservation easement law. And your office recently filed suit against the city of Belfast and joined in an action to defend and preserve the conservation easements. And symbolically, it's our little conservation easement, and it's important to us locally, but Maine has over 7 million acres of conservation easements that we all rely upon and environmentally bank upon. And this action that you took and your able assistants took means a great deal to us, and I want to thank you.
Thanks for your call, Paul. And yes, there is the legislature has required the Attorney General's office to be involved in any case that may involve the termination or the reformation, revision of a conservation easement. The purpose of that law, presumably, is to make sure that you know, to the extent that there is a public interest in ensuring that these conservation easements are followed, that the AG's office is at least involved to provide that voice. Not sure if the litigation will get to the point where we're really involved anymore. That said, it is to the extent that, you know, it is important that the Attorney General's office be available as required by statute when it comes to any sort of reformation or termination of a conservation easement. That's the job of the office.
Paul, thank you so much for your call. Attorney General Fry, I wanted to ask you about a recent case that's kind of unusual for Maine. There was an acquittal of an Auburn man in a shooting in a Walmart parking lot, really unusual in a manslaughter, a self-defense case in a shooting. And I was wondering what you think about this case and this verdict.
Well, I probably won't get too much into the specifics of the case, but here's what I have a lot of respect for. Both as a, you know, I served as a defense attorney in private practice before I became attorney general, represented a number of individuals who were charged with a crime. And of course, for the last 2.5-3 years, I've served as attorney general. And what I have such a respect for and faith in is that our system of justice is available for a complete presentation of the evidence, where an individual, you know, like the defendant in this case, has the right to have 12 jurors, 12, you know, individual citizens decide on whether or not they are guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. There's a presumption of innocence that remains with that defendant up to the point where a jury of 12 decides unanimously that that person should be found guilty. In this case, I'm confident that all the evidence was presented for the jury's consideration. I'm confident in the investigation that was conducted. And with all of the information that was presented to the jury, the jury found, found not guilty. And so that is our process, right? That is what our federal and state constitution provide for. That's what court rules and statutes all focus us on. And so I guess that's my comment on that. A lot of thinking has been done about, how the jury might arrive at that decision, but it's a constitutional process. The jury deliberated, rendered their time, and I respect that the jury found what it found. I have respect for that process.
All right. And just a couple minutes left in the show, and going to go from a very narrow question to a pretty broad one, which is wondering if your office is dealing with more cybersecurity cases as we move further into the 21st century.
Well, certainly something that folks need to be mindful of, right? I mean, here it is, we're entering the holiday season. A lot more activity for purchasing different gifts, particularly as it's getting harder and harder to find stuff on shelves. A lot of folks are going to be going online. It seems easy to just put in your information to buy something. But as you indicated, there's a lot of activity that can happen online that could create big problems for individuals who are not mindful of what they're putting out there. Anonymity, it creates a challenge, right? So like when you're engaging with folks online, it's really hard to know who it is that you're dealing with. We had a case that I'm familiar with here in the office where the consumer had bought a service in order to help improve their security, and it required allowing this entity to have permission to use their computer, right? To remote log into their computer, created problems. And so this is just a way of saying that, folks treating their online life should be no different than how you treat your other parts of life, right? If you're going out into a store, you're not going to shout your social security number. You're not going to shout your date of birth. To the extent that there are legitimate security products, there are ways to ascertain the validity of who it is you might be working with online. Please just make sure you look before you leap when you're engaging in any sort of online work. And as usual, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Final word from Attorney General Aaron Frey. Thank you so much for returning to Maine Calling. Hope you will come back again. Today's sound engineer, Sandra Harris. Maine Calling produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to discuss the controversy over vaccine mandates. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.